Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All 3 engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tame the Monkey, the show where we talk all things mindset and provide stories and inspiration to help tame your monkey mind. I'm your host, Kelly Fryer, the life architect based in the UK. Now, mindset is the belief or beliefs that you have about yourself and your most basic qualities. And on this show, our experts share how your beliefs can impact your success. It's a beautiful, sunny Monday here. It looks as though it will last. I keep fingers and toes crossed as the weather seems to be making such a difference to our mood. And certainly here, everyone seems much more friendly when the sun is out and they can spend more time outside with family and friends. Now, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I signed up to complete a half marathon. My training is going really, really well. I can feel the increase in my energy and my sleep is so much better. I'm journaling my training daily, and the journaling is not only helping track my progress, but being more aware of my thoughts is really, really helping me. I journal anyway, but I never have daily. I'm also training for a charity cycle that's taking place in June, so I'm out on my bike a lot, although not this weekend. On Saturday, I was running a development day in London with a great group of people, and we talked a lot about trust, honesty, and integrity. And it was really interesting to see how different our views and perceptions on these subjects can be. Then yesterday, I was having a total declutter of cupboards and files, specifically things that I haven't used or read over the last 12 months. There's something quite healthy about removing clutter from our lives. It gives us more headspace and is quite like a cleansing ritual, a kind of out of the old and in with the new type feeling. And as the saying goes, tidy house, tidy mind. I came across a number of photos and cards of colleagues and was so proud to see what a difference I'd made to them and to myself over the years. I also found some old notebooks and, flicking through some of them, realised just how far I've progressed over the last few years, not just in knowledge and skills, but also in confidence. Now, I'm passionate about growth and not dwelling too much in the past, but reflection can enable us to see where we have come from and where we are now, and that can lift our spirits and our confidence even more. Now, our guest today knows a lot about confidence and will be able to give us an insight into how to increase our confidence, along with many other tips. Today's guest is Deborah McPhillamy. Deborah is passionate about self-empowerment. Her catalyst was when she discovers how to heal her own body from ME after doctors told her to accept it and live with it, that there was no cure. She took the same stance when it came to her own relationship troubles and the rest of her life. She believes that you can turn anything around, whether you have failed once or 100 times, that you should never, ever give up on your dreams or your desires. Deborah is passionate about working with women and children and helping them to become empowered in every aspect of their lives. Now, if you want to call in with any questions for Deborah today, listeners in North America can call 646-716-7979. That's 646-716-7979. And listeners in the rest of the world can use the chat function that's now open by visiting my personal Facebook page or the Coach on Fire Facebook page. So, Deborah, thank you so much for joining me today and welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello, I'm fantastic. Thank you. How are you?
Brilliant. I'm great. Thank you. Sunny, shining, mood lifted. It's a wonderful, wonderful day.
Yeah, beautiful.
So let's start. Is the weather good for you today?
Sunny. We live close to Bognor, which apparently has the most sun in the UK. So I'm happy.
Oh, lovely. I'm not jealous at all. So let's start. I know we were having a quick chat before we went on the show, and I mentioned there that I'd been on a sort of running development day.
Yeah.
On Saturday, and then sort of busy yesterday. But I understand you've had quite a hectic few days yourself.
If only it was just running. Yeah, I have been on an intensive fire walking instructor training course, which is I'm all about self-empowerment. So this is just another deeper level that I wanted to take myself to. And then obviously so I could teach my audience the skills. But it was intense. It was crazy, but it was life-changing. It was amazing. So
fantastic.
It was crazy.
Fantastic. So I suppose, first of all, what made you want to sign up to do that type of course in the first place?
Well, I work a lot with women who've had really bad relationships. It's something that's really dear to my heart. So, and you'll find that, you know, people that get back into the same sort of relationships, or when they can't fix their relationships, or they get attracted to the wrong kind of partners, a lot of it is based on fear of not being enough, fear of not being themselves. So everything has to do with fear. And I've been doing this work for many, many years, but as I've sort of been upping my game more and wanting to do more work and put myself out there even more, I discovered that I still had some of my own fears that I hadn't dealt with. You know, fears like fear of success, fear of failure, fear of completely being myself. And I just thought I have to do something about it because I wanted to move forward and just be more of myself. And somebody actually suggested it. They said, you know, why don't you go on fire walking? I was looking for something to challenge me. And I said, why on earth would I want a fire walk? Are you crazy? I mean, what's the point of fire walking? But when I Googled it and I found that this company that does it in the UK, and discovered that the trainer was trained by the same man who trained Tony Robbins and T. Harv Eker, I just thought, wow, this is actually everything to do with fear and nothing to do with walking on fire or walking on coals, hot coals.
Yeah.
And that's why I signed up, because I just wanted to push through those last barriers of my own fear.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine, maybe rightly or wrongly, I know we, you know, kind of talk about mindset. I know we kind of both work in that field quite a bit. And I suppose a lot of the time it is just changing our thought processes, changing our kind of patterns of behavior and those sorts of things. I would imagine, but correct me if I'm wrong, there's quite a bit more to firewalking than just saying, I can do it.
There's a heck of a lot more. The mindset work that I do is very, very deep. It's a lot to do with beliefs and programming, reframing, you know, because when you have a lot of damage, there's just so much work to be done.
Oh.
And the firewalking is all about putting yourself in a different state of mind, because we become like, you know, we focus on things, and when we focus on the wrong things, so not just on the thoughts, but actually focusing on the outcome, and we focus on the wrong outcome, or we have the wrong intention, we end up in situations that we don't want to be in. So with firewalking, it teaches you that how to focus, so how to shift your mindset completely. And everything I've done before has always been, it's kind of you get your mind to change your body. But what firewalking does is when you do something physically like that, it actually works in the opposite way. Not opposite, but from a different angle. So your body helps your mind to shift and to change. So it's a different connection.
Because our bodies are, I'm assuming here, firewalking is one thing I've absolutely never done. Our body, you know, automatically, or our mind, you know, kind of when we're in that type of situation, we can release various different chemicals, can't we? And automatically that kind of control comes from the brain pathways to help us deal with that. But I would imagine that, you know, a physical sensation of that burning can form all sorts of different patterns within our body and within our heads.
Yeah, but not everybody burns. I mean, I never burnt my feet. It felt like I was walking on ice cold coals. I didn't feel anything. But I've got into such a heightened state. And the thing is that the brain and the mind are so powerful that, I mean, some people never have anesthetic when they have their teeth removed. Sometimes even with, you know, operations and stuff, because they've learned how to get their mind to put them into a different state. And often if you speak to people that have been in car accidents or who have hurt themselves, it's almost like the body releases such a powerful boost of hormones and endorphins, almost like sort of a morphine effect, that you don't feel anything. So, you know, the mind is incredibly powerful, but it's just learning how to actually switch that monkey mind or switch the chattering off. And just, it's like you have a razor sharp arrow focus, because it then releases, obviously, as you say, it calms your body down, it relaxes you. It's very difficult to explain unless you've been there, I have to admit, because, as I said, this was one of the most powerful things I've ever done.
Yeah.
But it really taught me just how powerful the mind and the body is.
Fantastic. I thought I may have to come along to one of your training sessions and see if we can put
you
that
will.
Into practice. Maybe that'll be the thing I need to kind of kickstart this year to get me going.
Yeah.
Deborah, the work that you do kind of works at quite a deep level. And I think, again, when, you know, I suppose when we're going through any sort of change, it is a little bit like kind of peeling back that onion, isn't it? Kind of layer by layer.
Yeah.
So, how do you, I suppose, what, or I suppose, what would you start with to get people to really go into that deep level? Is that something you do quite quickly, or is that over a kind of period of time?
You know, I have found that some people can do it quicker than others. It depends what tools you use. And I also find it depends on the amount of damage. So if you've had a really traumatic childhood, sometimes it can take a lot longer because there's just so much stuff. Also, if a child is very sensitive, I mean, some children are much more sensitive than other children. You know, it's almost like they absorb people's feelings and absorb things in their skin, never mind in their sponge-like mind in those first 7 years. Yeah. Those kind of children, you'll find if they've had a traumatic childhood, or even it doesn't have to be massively traumatic, but what they've perceived as traumatic, mm-hmm. you'll find that you need to do a lot more work with them versus people that might have one or two bad incidents. Because especially if it starts from a really young age, it compacts. So if something, for instance, happens to a child at the age of 3 and their mindset is instantly changed and they see it as traumatic, their filters change, their neural pathways change. So every incident that happens after that compacts that one. So when I get somebody that comes on a course or does some work with me and they're 40, 50 years old and they've never, ever addressed any of that stuff, sometimes it takes a heck of a lot longer. But there are tools that you can use on certain people that it can almost be instantaneous. You know, so if you're doing EFT, TFT, Havening, I've got my own process of inner healing that I use with people. That can be quite dramatically, can make a dramatic change quite quickly. It just depends on the individuals. But coming back to your question, how you do that, obviously the first thing that I would do is to make them aware and very self-aware. And this is what I find so interesting. A lot of people are not aware of their emotions. They know that they're angry. They know that they're sad, but they don't know why they feel that way. They don't know where it comes from. So that's kind of the very, very first thing I do with anyone, is to make them very aware of how they feel, why they're feeling that way, the sensations in their bodies, the symptoms, because you cannot get to the mind unless you go through the emotions first.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you find the people that come and work with you are, I suppose, kind of fairly receptive and open to what you're going to do with them? And does that help them be able to, you know, able to move forwards better?
You know what I find is most people that come to me, it's almost like they're so desperate for change, or they've got to the point where they're like, they don't know where else to turn. I find that the work I do, which is really sad, is that people don't see it as preventative, that you can prevent a lot of stuff from happening. You can prevent a lot of pain if you learn how to understand yourself and your emotions and your, you know, how you work. I mean, your operating manual. So by the time they get to me, they're in such a terrible state because it's now, okay, I've tried everything else. You can help me, please. That's it. And I find it quite frustrating that it has to get to that point, but that's just the nature of it at the moment. People don't do preventative things.
It is absolute shame. And I suppose I can mirror that with a lot of the people that I work with. I think when they kind of get to that point, do you find there is that kind of point of I suppose kind of desperation and despair? You know, I really want to change, but I don't know. You know, it is kind of, you know, last rung of the ladder, really. I don't know what to do. I don't know how I'm going to make a difference.
It is, but I also think that a lot of people, they know that they're feeling bad or they don't like the results of their relationships. They're unhappy. And often, so if they hear me speak about something, it's almost like a little bit of a light bulb that goes, oh my gosh, he has hope. I've never thought of this before, because there's not an awareness about that you don't have to stay in that situation. You don't have to stay in that relationship. You don't have to stay wallowing in that pain. There is a solution. So often it happens, I'll go do a talk somewhere and I'll be talking, whether it's about health or ME or whatever it is, and then they have light bulb moments. So that's often how I get my clients or I get my audience. It's very seldomly that people come to me in a desperate stage of you're the last person that can help me, unless they've been referred.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it's an interesting one. It's a really, really interesting one.
I suppose it's good if they've got that willingness to want to work with you anyway. So it makes the whole journey easier for both of you, I suppose.
Definitely. And if they feel they can trust you and they know that you've had, you've had success with other people and they understand a bit about your own background, I really feel that that makes a huge difference, as opposed to just going to a normal, you know, just to a regular counselor that they don't really know, or a psychiatrist, which could be a bit more clinical.
Interesting. Thank you. So before we go any further, let's just give listeners that number again. So if you're calling from North America, you'd like to dial in. The number to call is 646-716-7979. That's 646-716-7979. And listeners from the rest of the world can chat in. With any questions, the chat function is open and you can do so either from the Blog Talk Radio page or you can do that via Facebook. So Deborah, a couple of things that you were kind of talking about there that I'll just sort of elaborate on, if I may.
Mm.
You spoke a little bit about kind of a fear of success.
Mm.
And again, I think for me, I think I've been there. I've had that personally. I know some of the clients that I've worked with have got that. I suppose it seems at first a little bit of an odd thing to have a fear of, doesn't it?
It does. Fear of failure and fear of success is obviously, they seem opposite. But so the way I understand it is, when you have a fear of success, it's usually because you feel like you can't cope. A lot of people use the word, I feel so naked, I feel so vulnerable, I don't want to be out there. And it's usually when you find, especially with people that just don't accept their own brilliance, or they don't accept their own creativity. So a lot of people that have a fear of success is they have this perception that it's going to put them into a state of, or put them into onto another level that they won't cope with it. And as I said, the whole thing about, oh my God, it just makes me feel nervous or vulnerable or naked, because I'm going to have to be myself. the fear of failure is more about what other people think about us. So very much you don't want to look like a fool. You don't want to let your family down. It's always about other people, whereas the fear of success is all about you.
Mm-hmm. And how do you then, with the work that you do around confidence, how would you kind of help somebody get over that? So, you know, if it is this overwhelming, you know, fear of success, not wanting to put themselves out there, not wanting to be visible, not wanting to own up, you know, to their own brilliance or kind of put that out there. How would you start that conversation with somebody?
Well, it's generally obviously just listening to the words and then finding out what is it exactly what makes them so scared of being successful.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be that they don't know how to cope with money? Could it be that they not going to be able to or feel like they don't have all the answers if somebody approaches them and wants their help? Could it be that they don't feel like they have the proper qualifications? Interestingly enough, you'll find a lot of people in their 40s and 50s, if they never went to university, there's an old age belief that you need to have that piece of paper to prove that you have a qualification.
I've got
nonsense.
A couple of friends in their early 40s. They kind of got to 40 and all of a sudden, you know, been hugely successful all the way throughout their careers. And then started talking about, you know, not being successful because they never went to university. I'm like, you've had 25 years of success.
Exactly. It's crazy because it's programming. It's the way we were raised. It was, you know, it's what our teachers told us. It's what our parents told us. You had to go to university to get a job. Mm. You had to go to university, you know, to make your mark on the world. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. If you look at some of the most successful people in the world, you'll find that most of them never went to university. So that's a massive one. So it really comes down a lot to it comes down a lot to our programming and how we were raised and the people that sort of spoke into our lives. Because as children, we always believe adults more than we believe ourselves. We're taught to listen to people that are bigger and older than ourselves. Respect your elders, listen to your elders. And therefore, we doubt ourselves. So a lot of that comes into play. I had another thought that I just forgot for a second, but I'll come back to it. But so you kind of just work through what is it exactly that makes you so scared of being you and putting yourself out there? The other one I wanted to say. The other one was I was dealing with somebody last week, and she's got this fear of success. She's incredible. She's one of 10 people in this country that has does the treatment that she does, and she specializes in pain relief. And I can't remember the technique that she does, but it's so successful. I mean, people don't even have to go back to her because she realigns their body in a complete different way to any other car. She's not a chiropractor or anything, but it's incredible. Her fear is of she doesn't want to betray her parents because she was raised to be a wife, a mother, her own mom and dad kept on saying that to her. No, it's not about your success. It's about your husband's success.
Okay.
So then that whole thing comes into play. Well, she wants to be loyal to her family or her parents, so she doesn't want to make them look bad. So there's that fear that if she makes them look bad or she's not loyal or she betrays them, she can't be successful because that's what she will be doing.
Right, okay. As you were saying earlier, kind of quite deep-rooted with what we get told.
That's it. All comes down to programming.
Yes. So what kind of, we'll maybe kind of come on to this a bit later as well, but what would you say, is there kind of one tip or technique or tool, again, you know, may very much depend on the person, that you would start with somebody to help them start that reprogramming process?
Well, I have got my own program that I've developed over the years. So it's got a few tools. I very fondly refer to it as my 7 selfie program.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically And it's kind of looking at people's PowerPoints. So we all sort of have areas within us, in our bodies, our minds, of where we either gain power or where power is taken away from us.
Okay.
So I take people through a process, and they kind of follow the same sort of process. Different things come up, but I've developed certain tools that I use going through the process with them.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of starting, the step one would be starting with, you know, their survival issues that they have and their fears, their root fears, their absolute root fears of what is it that they, you know, if you look at things like money, just surviving, everything that we need to survive.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I start, and then work my way up.
Okay.
But yeah. It's a process.
And you designed that yourself. How have you been able to design your own framework?
Well, I've been doing this since, I started working as a counselor, as a coach in 1998.
Uh-huh.
So I've had 18 years of experience, and I've worked with children, adults, corporate, and it's just sort of really taking note. And I've studied human behavior and all sorts of things and personalities and kind of taken all my research and data of all the people that I've helped and noticed certain things were very, very similar.
Yeah.
And then I've been on so many courses myself and looked at different techniques and seen which ones have worked the best and incorporated them into my process.
Uh-huh.
But the one thing that I was taught even before I went into counseling actually was something called inner healing. So it was very much about childhood. It's like a type of, it's not hypnotherapy, but you can almost say it's hypnotherapy on speed, because it just helps go back to the mind straight away and look at the deepest issues and fix it quite soon, or get the person to fix it themselves. So I've kind of taken all of those tools, picked out the ones that worked, researched them, tried them out, and then put this process together. So that's how I did it. And it
works.
It's effective. Yeah. I try and make it a bit fun as well. So it's not all just deep crying. It's really reprogramming the mind quite easily without affecting the person too much in a traumatic way.
Yeah. Funny is such an important part of the process, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And it's
we need to laugh. Yeah.
You do. And you need to have fun, because, you know, I think we sometimes make life so hard for ourselves.
Yeah, we do. We need to inject a little bit of fun into it to make it better on the way. Now, Deborah, if you don't mind, before we sort of start going into, I suppose, how you got into the sort of journey of empowerment for women, we mentioned in your bio, and I think you kind of touched on it when you were saying about the talks that you do, you cured yourself of ME.
Yeah.
What was that journey?
Well, I had just come out of quite an abusive relationship,
mm-hmm.
a violent relationship. And once I was out of it, I was exhausted. I was just worn out. I was just tired all the time, and didn't really know what was going on. I was a single mom, two little children, got divorced. And then eventually they said to me, you've got ME. And this was, this was a long time ago, 97 or something. And basically said to me, they can't help me. They didn't understand it then. They called it yuppie flu at that stage. They said it's, you know, high achievers, people that do too much and too ambitious, and they get burnt out. So they thought it was that. We didn't really have the internet then. I mean, I was still living in South Africa. No internet. I think it was kind of just starting to be spoken about. And we didn't have access to as much information. Anyway, so for 7 years, I just had to accept it, because how else was going to... And at that stage, doctors were gods. You know, what doctors said, you kind of just had to believe it, because they were supposedly the people that knew everything. You kind of just thought that. So for 7 years, I struggled. I discovered diet pills, and because I discovered that diet pills gave you energy, I had to stay awake during the day. I had to work. I was a single mom. There was no benefits. There's no UIF or unemployment. You just had to work. Otherwise, you didn't eat. So I just kind of got through it. And then 7 years later, there was one of these multi-marketing or pyramid companies, or whatever you call them, one of the health ones, had come to South Africa, and with it they had brought lots of information. And one of the they had released a book, and it was about a man who had healed his cancer by changing his diet. He had this massive tumor in his tummy, and his mom had had a similar problem, and he watched her suffer, and he saw how she died from the chemotherapy. And he said there was no way he was going to put himself through that. So he did lots of research. He went to this alternative cancer place in Mexico. And anyway, so when I saw this book, my mom had got the book. Somebody lent it to her, read the book, and I went, wow, if this man can heal his stomach from cancer, surely I can heal my chronic fatigue, because it's not as serious. And I did. Changed my diet. I started juicing. I put everything into practice, and it was 2 weeks. I was a different person. It was incredible, absolutely incredible. But that was kind of my catalyst, because I then realized that doctors didn't know it all. Because if they knew it all, they would have given me that solution. And it opened my mind and it opened my world. And I realized that there was just a heck of a lot of information out there that we, you know, we had no privy to. So that's how it all started for me, where I realized that we are powerful human beings and we can heal our own bodies. We don't have to depend on drugs. We don't have to depend on doctors. You know, we are in charge of our own bodies.
Yeah, amazing. And to get that change so quickly must have been absolutely phenomenal for you.
It was insane, because I thought it was going to take me about a month. I had taken a month off of work, and the first week was horrendous, because you go through, I went through such detox. It was just crazy. But by the second week, at the end of that week, I had energy that I hadn't had in 7 years. It was incredible, and I had to just spread the word. I just wanted everybody to know about it, and so much so that I then traveled to America, because the man whose book I read was living in America, and I wanted him to teach me. And I went to America. I sold my car to pay for the trip, because that's the only way I could afford it. And went to study then. I was. I just thought everybody needs to know this. You can't hold this information back. People need to be empowered. So I traveled to America, went and studied under this man, and then went back to South Africa and started teaching. And that's kind of how I got into the field of helping other people, because that was the first thing I did. I became a health coach. So that's how it all started.
Fantastic. Quite a journey. Absolute journey. So you obviously talked there about the kind of self-healing. I think you know you sort of mentioned that you're still working, you know, with women and children, and, you know, helping from that perspective. But how did you then begin your journey into empowerment for women?
How that happened was 5 years after that story, I got fibromyalgia. And you still there?
Yes, still here. Yeah, sorry.
It sounded like you'd gone.
But yes, I'm here.
I got fibromyalgia, and I thought, why on earth am I sick again? I'm following what I did before, my body. I was feeding myself properly, I was exercising, and I couldn't understand why I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And the doctor that I saw, the GP, this was obviously 5 years after so he was a little bit more advanced in these matters, and he sent me to a specialist in another city. And the specialist said to me, he was a fibromyalgia specialist, and he said to me, the reason people have fibromyalgia is because of unresolved emotional issues. And I went, okay. Didn't tell me how to fix it. He just said, I have unresolved emotional issues. I need to sort it out. Sent me home. And I was working for a company. My boss had just come back from overseas. And he said, Deborah, you need to find us a coach who does work in emotional intelligence. And I said, what is emotional intelligence? And he said, yes, the book. It's Daniel Goldman's book. It's incredible. It's fantastic. You need to find us a trainer. Couldn't find a trainer. Found a book, found two authors, nagged them to death for them to teach me how to train it. But how it kind of played into the self-empowerment thing for women, because at the same time, I realized that the unresolved emotional issues were obviously because of the abuse from when I was married. Uh-huh. And I'd never healed from that. I didn't even know how to heal from it. You kind of just survive and you get on with your life. You've got children, you've got to carry on. So I never thought, oh gosh, that had an impact on me. Or I never clicked how much of an impact it had on me. So I then became a trainer that was sort of, I then specialized in emotional intelligence. I started this studying PNI, which is psychoneuroimmunology, so how your psychological state affects your immune system. And so it was during this process, I just started off doing the EQ work. I was working with corporate companies, and I'd already been in a second abusive relationship. So by the time I realized that there was a cycle going on, I'd already got into the third one. So I had, and got out of that and sat down one day, one weekend, and I went, what on earth is going on? I'm the common denominator here. How come I'm getting all these terrible relationships? Why am I attracting these weird people into my life? And it was not long after that. So I obviously sat down and went through a self-discovery process, looked at my irrational beliefs, my self-limiting beliefs, discovered that I had crazy beliefs about men and relationships and myself, and didn't like myself and had such hang-ups because I was a girl, because I thought you could achieve so much more when you were a boy, and really realized that the environment that I'd been raised in, and just a lot of women have been raised in because of all the suppression of the past decades ago, that I'd kind of taken that on board, and I'd almost had a different way of thinking about men, that men had more privilege, that men were just awful. So kind of realized that that's the reason I kept getting back into these relationships, because that's just coming back to programming again. And I met somebody, and he said to me, I have met so many women that have the same problem as this. You need to write a book about it, which I did. He, you know, really encouraged me. He said, write a book. Even if you just help one woman, you're going to change many people's lives by sharing your story and telling them how you fixed yourself and fixed your relationships and your beliefs and stuff like that. I wrote the book, and then I released it during the 16 Days of Activism. Every year they have something called the 16 Days of Activism against child abuse and woman abuse. And it just had a snowball effect. It was the first book of its kind in South Africa. I was the first woman that went onto national TV and said, I'd been in abusive relationships. It's not okay. You can get out of it. You don't need to stay in it. And it was just, it just went crazy after that, because suddenly people wanted me to speak everywhere. I was on so many different radio shows, TV, newspapers, magazines. It was just insane. So it made me realize that there was this incredible need for work with women. An empowering woman. And that's kind of what then led me into that field. That's kind of how it just happened. It wasn't planned, but I have discovered it. It's obviously, it's my purpose, and it's something I'm really passionate about.
Fantastic. Do you think, I suppose, kind of writing that book and, you know, like you said, TV, radio, do you think that in itself kind of allowed you to, we spoke earlier about, you know, the kind of layers of an onion and being able to unpeel those a bit more. Do you think all of that was helping you kind of peel back another level on your own journey of, I suppose, self-healing?
Yeah, you never stop healing. You know, once you get on the self-development path, it's like you never get off of it, because you know, you want to become a better person. You want to be the best version of yourself all the time. So when I wrote the book, that was incredibly healing. It was mind-blowingly healing, because there was so much stuff I had suppressed that I'd forgotten about. So I would start writing, cry, heal, work through it, move on, go through the next stage. So that was very cathartic, and it was incredibly healing. And then every time you're working with other people, you're helping them, but it's healing you as well, because uh-huh. you're learning from them. You learn from the people that you teach and you help. So definitely it's just a continuous journey that you're on.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so if any of our listeners would like to call in with any questions for Deborah, our North American listeners can dial in to 646-716-7979. That's 646-716-7979. And if you're listening from anywhere else in the world, you can contact us by going into the chat function, either from the through the Facebook page or on the Blog Talk Radio section. So, Deborah, as I said, kind of an amazing journey that you've been on so far. You've clearly had an impact, you know, not only on yourself, but a huge number of other people that you've worked with. So, talk to us a little bit more now about where you are at this point in your journey and the type of work that you're doing with other people.
Well, the plan for me is now to almost replicate what I did in South Africa. As I said, I've put together this fully comprehensive self-empowerment program, and not just for women that have kind of been in abusive relationships, but any woman that wants to move forward in their business, with their parenting skills. I love working with parents. I love uh-huh. empowering women to empower children. Very passionate about that, because I think if you teach your children these kind of life skills from foundation stage, you know, you can teach children or babies from 8 months, you can teach emotional intelligence to. So if they know why they have those feelings and how to cope with them and how to validate them and how to deal with them, I mean, goodness gracious, can you imagine how successful your children turn out to be? I've got a grandson who is 4.5 years old, and I started teaching him emotional intelligence from 8 months old. That kid
wow.
is more aware and has more empathy in his finger than a lot of people, adults, have. So, you know, he's in a complete different level because he's been taught from a young age. So I do a lot of that work. We had a thing in the newspaper the other day. I was chatting to a journalist, and she was saying how wonderful it would be if they could include work like this in the schools.
Absolutely.
Teach life skills to children. But yeah, anyway, so that's what I focus on a lot. I love empowering parents with these skills so that they can pass them on to their children.
And I suppose, as you said, that then starts to break the cycle, doesn't it? Because if as we grow into adults, we haven't dealt with any issues that have come up throughout our childhood, we then, you know, we kind of start to place layer upon layer of more self-doubt or, you know, more negativity on top of it, don't we? Whereas if we can start to do that from an early age, ultimately, I suppose, you know, for the likes of you and I that you know, are kind of helping more adults as we go through this, we're completely out of biz. But I think, you know, I'd much rather have that and have lots more happy, focused people than, you know, sort of keep repeating the same cycle. Because I think it's very easy for us to put on our children our own beliefs, our own patterns, all of those sorts of things, isn't it?
Yeah, and you don't even have to open your mouth to pass it on to your kids, because that's the nature of the mind. Children, those first 7 years, are like sponges. Their minds are in a complete different state. It's like in a semi-conscious state for those first 7 years. So what you feel, your expressions, so children read your expressions on your face. They read the expression in your eyes. They make their own interpretations. They feel all your feelings. Children are narcissistic. We all supposed to be like that. So especially in those first couple of years. So if you're sad or you've had a really bad day, and you don't explain it to your children and they don't understand their emotions, they think it's about them. They make everything about them. So if you're battling, if you're angry, whatever, they always make it about them. People get divorced, the children make it about them. And the sad thing is that adults don't realize how intelligent children are, you know. And what frustrates me is, why don't you want your children to have these life skills? Why are parents, they still haven't switched on to this fact that if you invest more time with your children, mm-hmm. teaching them these life skills, they can have a much better experience in life.
Do you think that part of that, though, is because that, you know, as adults, we maybe don't necessarily believe it, because actually we didn't have that from our parents. We didn't get that at school. We didn't get that from anybody, you know, in kind of our adult circle. So, you know, if we don't necessarily understand it, do you think that's what stops people making those changes or recognizing that there is a need for that with our children?
Definitely, because here's the thing, people are automatic parents. They just do what their parents did. They don't stop to think. A lot of people don't stop to think, well, actually, remember what I felt like as a child, and I don't want my child to feel that way. So therefore, if I want to give them a different result, I need to have a different action. It's so inbred. I mean, I've asked people often, why do you do that? Oh, I don't know. That's the way my dad did it, or that's the way my mom did it. I mean, they don't stop. So there isn't that awareness. It's an automatic thing. It's that same thing as when you learn to drive a car, when you learn to ride a bicycle. You know, once that programming is there, you just do it. And that's the unfortunate thing. So I think there needs to be a lot more awareness. I also think that people can be quite skeptical. And then often it just comes down to laziness. I mean, I know it sounds awful to say, but parenting is hard work. And if you don't want to put the work in, don't have a child, in my opinion, because somebody called it a job once. Parenting is a job. And if you think about it, you go to school. So school prepares you supposedly for a career. You go to college or you go to uni because that's more preparation for a career. What do you do to become a better parent? What schooling do you go to? School doesn't teach you. They don't teach you life skills in school. So why will you spend thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of going to a college or a university, but you won't even go on a parenting course because you think you know it all, because you're just going to do it the way your parents did it. So I'm hoping that will change one day, the more people become aware, you know, peaceful parenting, and there is a different way. So I'm hoping it's going to keep evolving, you know, with people like you and myself that are going to keep talking about it, because that's the only way it's going
to
happen.
What do you think we can do to start breaking that cycle?
I think more adults need to speak up and be open and honest about how their childhood affected them. Mm-hmm. And I think adults don't do it because they feel like they are being disloyal. They feel like they are making their parents look bad, but they're not. If you're stating a fact and you're just going, that parenting style affected me this way, you are just stating a factual thing about how it affected you. It doesn't mean you're making the person bad. So I do think if people are more open and speak about it, it will make them think and make them not want to do the same thing.
It takes a lot of courage to be able to do that, though, doesn't it? I think particularly with our parents, to be able to, you know, to sort of say this had an impact on me. There's a lot of courage there. Do you think a lot of people are prepared to kind of stand up and find that courage to be able to have that conversation?
It depends how much fear they have, because if they have fear of rejection, fear that they're going to lose a parent, fear of conflict, you know, there's this whole fear of conflict where people think that conflict is a bad thing. So a lot of people don't do it, no, because they have too many fears. They think that they're going to lose their parent or their parent won't speak to them. I mean, I went through a situation like that where I got into a conflict stage with one of my parents because I wasn't happy about the parenting, and it did create conflict, but I was so determined because I wanted the relationship to be better. I didn't, you know, I kind of felt like I had two choices. I could either carry on having this relationship with my parent that made me feel bad and judged and criticized and uncomfortable and unhappy, or I could face it, have a bit of conflict, keep talking, persevere, and then have a different relationship, which I now have. I have a fantastic relationship. But it was very much a determination for me that I didn't like the way the relationship was, and I wanted to have a different one. And I think if you focus on that, once again, it's like that fire walking thing. If you're going to focus on your feet and your feet burning, your feet are going to burn. But if you focus on the other end, what is it you want to achieve? What is the outcome?
How do you want to be at the end of it?
That's it. It gives you that determination. Plus, you can do it in a way that is gentle. It doesn't have to be filled with conflict. It doesn't have to be with anger. You can approach it in a way of saying, well, you know what? My parents did the best that they knew how. What was their journey? You know, they probably did it because that's why their parents, or that's the way their parents raised them. And if you kind of focus on that, you'll find it much easier. So it helps you to get rid of the fear. I mean, yeah.
Bravery, isn't it? Being able to take it. So I could talk to you all day. I think we've probably got time for probably a couple more questions before we sort the show, but I could absolutely just talk to you about this all day. I think it's amazing. So what, I suppose if I were to sort of ask about, I don't know, some tips that you could give us today to help increase our confidence, or, you know, have those difficult conversations with parents or children or teachers or ourselves, what kind of tips, what would be the starting point that we'd need to go through to increase our confidence?
To increase your confidence, my top tip would always be yourself. Forget about all the voices. Forget about what other people think about you. It doesn't matter what they say. You need to be comfortable in your own skin, because when you are yourself, your confidence just goes through the roof. You don't have to think about being yourself. You don't have to put yourself under pressure. You don't have to live up to anybody's standards. Just be authentic. Don't try and be somebody else. And how you get there, the very most important thing about being yourself is to accept yourself, accept who you are, accept what you look like, accept your strengths, accept your weaknesses. Everything starts with acceptance. So that would be my absolute biggest tip of all, is just acceptance and being yourself.
So self-acceptance of who we
are.
Brilliant. Deborah, how would you describe success?
I think success for everybody is different. Success for me is looking at the quality of my relationships. Mm-hmm. So success to me is the fact that my children seek me out, that they want to spend time with me, that they like me, that they like hanging out with me, having fun with me. And so for me, and obviously with my husband and my parents and my brothers, and so that to me is success. And I think it's obviously tied into my values, because family and relationships are very high on my values. So, I mean, so success is different for everybody else. And it's also just about the more comfortable I am in my own skin. That just makes me feel successful as a person, because I'm just getting rid of all the rubbish and I'm just being, I just am who I am, and I'm loving who I am, and I'm loving my job, and I'm loving what I'm doing. That to me is success.
Fantastic. And I suppose similar to a question I asked earlier, but what would you say are the two, you kind of spoke about the confidence and kind of being yourself, but what would you say would be your top tips for creating the right mindset and attitude?
Focus on the outcome. So if you, and the correct focus, so for instance, if your relationship is bad or it's not great, you want it to be better, you need to be clear what it is you want out of that relationship. So do you want it to be more loving? Focus on that. How can you make it more loving? Focus on what you can do, not about the other person, because you can't change them. They can only change themselves if they want to. But I find that when you give what it is you want, it changes the dynamic. So it's always about find out what it is you want. And it's that whole thing about your thoughts, isn't it? So it's, you know, whatever you're thinking about. So that would always be my step one for a mindset, proper mindset. And then once again, awareness, what is going on? Pay attention to what is going on. If things irritate you in other people, those are usually things within yourself that you haven't dealt with.
Yeah,
very
that mirror
important.
Effect, isn't it?
It's definitely that mirror effect. I mean, I had a situation not so long ago. There was something, somebody was really pushing a button, and I'm obviously, because I'm aware, I knew it was an issue within myself, but they kept pushing this button, and I was like, what is going on here? Dealt with it, and the relationship changed instantly the next day. We had a new connection. There was no more irritation. So just become really aware of yourself and try and fix it within yourself. Don't blame anybody else for it. You need to do it yourself. Everything that you feel and want to change is all about you.
Yeah.
And the last thing that I would say on that is follow your heart. You know, open your heart, follow your heart, do what makes you happy. To change your mindset, you need to know what your heart's desire is. And just follow it. And get rid of the fear. Go do some fire walking. Do whatever it takes. Get rid of the fear.
Yes, I think I'll definitely have to. I keep looking at it. Somebody asked me the other, just before Christmas, actually. Well, clearly, you know, you must have done a fire walk. I was like, no, haven't done that. So we could do that. So, Deborah, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, either about firewalking or any of the amazing work that you do around, you know, the sort of confidence, the relationships or those sorts of bits and pieces, how can they find you?
They can just go onto my website, which is Deborah McPhillamy. So it's spelled D-E-B-O-R-A-H. And then my surname, so it's all in one word, no stops in between, Mick, M for Mike, C for Charlie, P for Peter, H for Harry, I for Ivan, L for Lima, E for Echo, M for Michael, Y for Yahoo.com. So DeborahMcPhillamy.com.
Fantastic.
And all the contact details on there, yeah.
Fantastic. And that's for all of the work that you do on there, is it?
It is. And I'm launching my self-empowerment program in June, online self-empowerment program. So they can just drop me an email, find out a little bit more about that. And Kelly, for your listeners, if they send me an email with Tame the Monkey in the subject line,
okay,
I will enter them into a draw, and I will draw out one listener that, and they'll have free access to that full self-empowerment program.
Fantastic. That's an offer and a half.
Yeah.
So there you go, listeners. If you would like to get in contact with Deborah, you can go to her website, DeborahMcPhillamy.com. And as Deborah just said there, she's releasing her online self-empowerment course in June. If you want to go on that and you want to be with a chance of winning one of those, if you email Deborah through her website with Tame the Monkey in the subject heading, one lucky listener will get free access to that course. Deborah, thank you. As I said, I could just keep talking and talking and talking to you, but thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. You've been an amazing guest. And thank you ever so much for sharing your story. I look forward to hearing lots of great things about you again soon.
Yeah, and I hope to see you on one of my firewalks soon.
Yes. We'll have to see where we go. So, yes, let's have a go. No, we'll definitely have to speak about that later. But thanks ever so much.
Brilliant.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
A wonderful story there. I'm sure you'll all agree with Deborah. And it looks like I've now talked myself into doing a firewalk. So we shall see how that goes. My next show will be on next Monday. So we're now going to weekly. That will be on the Blab version. And my next guest is a wonderful woman called Ruby Maguire. Ruby will be joining us to talk about how to be more visible in your business and in different areas of your life by, again, increasing your confidence and a whole array of other tips and techniques. So as with everything, I suppose I want to leave you with a thought for today. And I think just tapping into to what Deborah was saying there, if we can start to really, I suppose, have a much deeper relationship with ourselves and start to focus on the relationships that we have with others, we can start to live a more empowered and confident life. If any listeners would like to appear on any of my future shows, you can contact me via my website, www.kelly-fryer.com. I want to say a huge thank you for all of you for listening again today. Do drop Deborah an email if you want to get involved with that self-empowerment course. And I look forward to speaking to you all again soon. So have a great evening. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.